Here's a special message from Briggs & Riley to every last-minute luggage packer. To those who hate packing around those annoying grooves in the bottom of your suitcase. To the challengers who try to cram a myriad of toothpaste, hairbrushes, and travel-sized shampoo bottles into the outer pockets. Many luggage has tried, and many have failed to accommodate the whim of the overzealous overpacker. Now there is a true sophisticated challenger. Briggs & Riley's perfect packing solution offers several casual, sophisticated collections that reflect the way we live and travel today. Their iconic outsider handle provides optimal capacity and flat packing inside. And only Briggs & Riley luggage has CX compression expansion technology, which increases capacity in the same size suitcase. The premium extra-wide garment panels help create additional compression to prevent shifting and wrinkling, so you can add more in a smaller space. And to the luggage handler who's extra hard on your luggage, Briggs & Riley will repair your luggage free of charge. No proof of purchase necessary. Clothes waiters and careless carriers, your match has been met. Visit Briggs-Riley.com for Briggs & Riley luggage.
Hey there, dog lovers. It's time to show your furry friend a little extra love and attention. After all, they're not just pets, they're family. At GetJoy, we provide top-of-the-line nutrition and wellness services to improve the lives of dogs and their families. GetJoy's dedicated team of animal science and vet nutritionists have expertly crafted their recipes to give your pup maximum health benefits. With options like gently cooked fresh meals, freeze-dried meals with pre, pro, and postbiotics for optimal gut health, and single-ingredient beef treats. Your best friend just got upgraded to a whole new level of pampering. And the best part? GetJoy's meals are made with wholesome ingredients right here in the USA with no fillers or artificial preservatives. Plus, when you subscribe to a GetJoy food plan, you'll be connected with a board-certified televet with services available 24/7. As a special offer to our listeners, visit GetJoyFood.com and use the code PODCAST at checkout to get a 50% off your first order today. That's GetJoyFood.com and use the code PODCAST at checkout to get 50% off your first order.
Live from the Play Show Yet Not Overly Ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to another week and a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm Straight Flexin', or the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Hot Take Icky is out on vacation. I did see that he has now shaved off his beard and only has a mustache remaining. It was very creepy. We'll see when he comes back tomorrow if he'll still have that caterpillar on his face. So Chris Hess, with Hickey being out, is producing this extravaganza all the way up until 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. The general manager of the New York Football Giants, Joe Shane, is going to stop by 20 minutes from now. And then coming up in about an hour 20, Lomas Brown will join us, the former Lions offensive lineman, now a part of their radio broadcast, as we'll do a little first and goal previewing the Lions season, as there's a lot of buzz surrounding the Detroit Lions for this upcoming year. I got to start off with college football. So on Thursday, we were getting the sense, and this eventually happened, that Washington and Oregon were off to the Big Ten, and you were going to see Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah go to the Big 12. We know a few weeks prior, Colorado also made that leap to the Big 12 as well, starting next year. So that goes down, or the thought of that, looks like they're on the five-yard line about to go score a touchdown, first and goal right at the five. Friday, I'm on the golf course early Friday morning. And usually when I'm on the golf course, my golf game creates enough chaos and stress to begin with. But I tried to disconnect from my phone. And I looked down at my phone, and it was a text from some people inside college football. It was a text from people in our industry, and even a text, multiple texts from people at our network. They're like, you see what's going on with all the changes in college football. So I'm just thinking, okay, it's an official announcement from the Big Ten. We're pleased to welcome Washington, and we're pleased to welcome Oregon, and it was the Big 12 as well. Arizona, Arizona State, Utah are now going to be proud members of the Big 12. But it was looking like, and I never really bought this, but the reporting was out there that maybe there's some cold feet with the Pac-12 teams, and Washington and Oregon and Arizona State and Utah were going to stay. And I was shocked. And a big part of me goes, I wonder who's leaking out that information, because it never made sense. And what I could gather is when people leave and people divorce and you have a split, you never want it to look like it's your fault, even when it's clear and obvious that it is your fault. And Washington and Oregon, even if it's not at a full membership rate from a TV standpoint, would have been the two dumbest schools in college football if they didn't move to the Big Ten. And also, not that the Big 12 is this great conference, but their stability, at least in the short term, with the Big 12, even though they lost Texas and Oklahoma, they did a good job poaching and securing BYU and Cincinnati and UCF and Houston as well, and then just adding Colorado for the sake of it. So if you were seeing that direction where you could forget, right, USC and UCLA that already are making the move to the Big Ten, that was the big domino to fall. When you had the news that those four schools, Texas and Oklahoma, were leaving the Big 12 to go to the SEC, and then you had USC and UCLA eventually going to the Big Ten, it was a race to see who was going to react the quickest from the Big 12 and the Pac-12 to, for I don't know how much amount of time, but to save your conference. And I'll give credit to the old Big 12 commissioner and the new commissioner for doing enough throughout the years to at least preserve their conference, where the Pac-12 just sat there and they got this offer from Apple where I guess each school would get $20 million and then based off subscriptions, you could get more money. And I'm looking at that and I go, the Big 12 is a better alternative. If you were just Arizona State, Arizona, and Utah, and the Big Ten didn't want you. And the only question that I had, which I thought of on Friday, when it was that report that maybe the Pac-12 teams are getting cold feet, is maybe the Big Ten just didn't want Washington and Oregon. Because over the last year, they had an opportunity to go get those schools, and they eventually did. But they weren't desperate to add those schools. And eventually, they'll be full-time members once this TV contract expires, and they'll get a bigger piece of the pie. But if you were Washington and Oregon, it absolutely made sense to go there. No matter what the discount was, it was, would the Big Ten embrace you and would they want you? Because if I'm looking at this objectively, and that's me, I don't root for nothing against them, Washington or Oregon or Arizona, Arizona State, Utah. You know, I like Kalen DeBoer. Now, I could root for Dan Lanning and Bo Nix. I do like our conversations with Kyle Whittingham all the time, and I hope Cam Rising has a healthy season. But if you're being objective here and you're looking at it, sure, Utah joining the Big 12 or Washington joining the Big 10 from a geography standpoint makes no sense. But it's amazing to me with how long this has been happening. And if you even want to go to a different sport, a different conference with the Big East, which was used to be the greatest basketball conference ever with the rivalries and the tradition, if they were able to break up and they had to form a new Big East, and it's been very successful, if that was able to happen, and that's a sport, don't get me wrong, college basketball is big, but it doesn't drive the train like college football does. If you couldn't learn from that, that college football drives the train, and they don't care about geography, it's all about how much money you could bring in, then I don't know where people have been the last 10 to 15 years. So I understand if you're a college football fan, you go, oh, some of these rivalries may be going away because you have these teams that have been in the same conference for a while, and they've had these great rivalries, and now they're moving to different conferences, and let's just call it how it is. You look at some of these rivalries that are going to go away, it's because one team's going to a new conference. You play your in-conference games, and then however many remaining games you have, three, four games, whatever the number is, depending on the conference, most of those schools schedule cupcake games. So even though I say as a college football fan, yes, schedule those rivalries so we still have those rivalries, you know the schools, because their objective is to win the most amount of games possible, make the most amount of money possible. That's why you're going to see a lot of these rivalries fade away. It's not because necessarily just that, oh, the game shouldn't be played, because the game absolutely should be played. But those schools aren't going to play an out-of-conference rivalry game as you've seen it for every year because they want to schedule these cupcake games. It's just the landscape of the sport right now. But overall, it's kind of amazing to me, and I think it is the minority. I don't believe it's the majority. How many people just don't understand what happened in the last few days? There was an opportunity for the Pac-12 to stay afloat. That went out the window the moment the Big 12 pounced once they saw two enormous brands leave. The Pac-12 had the same thing happen a little bit later with USC and UCLA, and they sat on their hands and they did nothing to secure their conference's future. And now you're down to four. And once again, if Colorado, I know they have prime time with Deion Sanders, and who knows how long he'll be there. But if he's able to quickly get Colorado to go back to the Big 12, yeah, sure. Some may say the death of the Pac-12 was when USC and UCLA did go or plan to go to the Big 10, but I don't necessarily agree with that. The death was when Colorado left in a weird way, and you saw the Big 12 be proactive, and they made sure to get to the front of the line as quick as possible once Texas and Oklahoma left. Not that BYU and UCF and Houston and Cincinnati replaces those schools, but it was at least we have enough schools where we could keep the conference afloat. And you look at the Pac-12, once Colorado leaves, in addition, you have the two big brands in USC and UCLA leave. What was the incentive for Washington and Oregon to stay? And that's why Washington and Oregon said, Big Ten, pretty, please, take us. And the Big Ten for a while was like, yeah, we're waiting for Notre Dame. And then once the Big Ten realized Notre Dame wasn't moving, it was, we're going to eventually add more schools. The brand of Washington and Oregon, especially with the Nike money for Oregon, is good enough. We don't need to have them, but let's go get them. And that's why I made that point last week. A big misconception when you look at all these conference changes, and eventually it may just be, and I think this will be the case, the Big Ten, the SEC, and then everybody else in terms of the Power Five, and will eventually truncate down to three conferences. There is an idea that the Big Ten and the SEC are just going to take everybody else, right? Well, we'll go take five ACC schools apiece. Oh, we'll take the leftovers of the Pac-12. If you don't bring something, why would those schools take you? Because then the TV companies aren't all of a sudden going to say, oh, yeah, you brought in Cal, so let's give Cal the $50 million a year. They're going to say, no, you're getting a certain amount of money from us. You divide up the rest if you want to go add more schools. So you have to have an attractive brand for the Big Ten and the SEC, and there has to be a reason for the Big Ten and SEC to be able to join you. You know, if you want to join them, you have to give a reason. You have to bring something to the table. Where the Big 12 is like, we'll take as many schools as possible for now. Now, not every school, because according to reports, the four leftover teams, I saw this in Brett McMurphy report, the four leftover teams of the Pac-12, the Big 12 isn't interested in. Because the Big 12 has done enough, taking the three schools from the American, one independent in BYU, adding then Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah to keep the conference afloat. Because for conferences like the Big 12, the ACC, at the time the Pac-12, you should rush to take as many schools that you could get as now, because you never know who else is going to leave. Because you could bet your ass, anytime the buyout goes down or it gets later on in the contract, the moment Florida State sees an opportunity to leave the ACC, they'll do it, because it's more lucrative in the SEC, where I think they'll go, or the Big Ten. Florida State right now, they could bitch and complain. They could cry. I used the analogy on Thursday. They're the kid right now that mom is in the grocery store and she's putting all the healthy options in the shopping cart. And then Florida State right now is the kid bringing the ice cream. And yeah, everyone should be able to get ice cream. You should want ice cream. But if mom says no, you're not getting that ice cream unless you pay your own way for it. And for Florida State to leave, it would cost them $120 million just for starters, and they have to go get their TV rights. You're looking at like $500 million or something like that. I know there's so much money being printed in college athletics and boosters, but you're not getting that money right now. But if I'm the ACC, I would actually jump on these four leftover teams in the Pac-12. And I know right now, I did see that Pete Thamel report, that the ACC is vetting maybe Cal and Stanford. But if you're the ACC, learn from the Big 12 and the Pac-12. Yeah, and the ACC's brand is better than the Big 12 and the Pac-12, but learn that if you don't get as many schools as possible, eventually schools are going to leave. And if you have enough schools leave, the conference will just fade away. And there are some brands in the ACC that will be attractive, or that the SEC and the Big Ten will say, I would like to do business with them. So right now, here's where we are. The Big 12 is smooth sailing for now. There could be some turbulence down the road. We'll get to that when we get there. But for the immediate future, the Big 12 is in a good spot. The Pac-12, it's dead. Because if you're those four schools, if you want to join right with the smaller conference, you got to look out for yourself. And I'll give credit to Oregon, Washington, Arizona State, Utah. They looked out for themselves. So don't do this, all right, we're going to have an alliance with our four teams. Because remember, when you had college football a few years ago, wasn't it the Big Ten was joining an alliance with the Pac-12? And I forget who else. Maybe it was the ACC or the Big 12. There was an alliance. That alliance means nothing because everyone's selfish. And you gotta be out there for yourself. So right now, where we're at is the Big Ten and the SEC are king. The Big 12 has done a nice job staying afloat. The ACC will eventually have a good amount of teams leave as you get through that contract, which expires in 2036. And the Pac-12 has four schools remaining. And I don't really think there's a road to save the Pac-12. But that's the state of college football right now. Is there's going to be a ton of more movement. We've seen big dominoes fall. The biggest one is still Notre Dame if they'll ever join a conference, and it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. And through time, the Power Five will say goodbye to the Pac-12. It will be the Core Four, whatever you want to call it. And I do eventually believe that we will see the Big Ten, you know, years from now, the SEC lead the way, and it'll be the haves and then the have-nots. And that will be whatever remains of whatever schools the Big Ten and the SEC don't pluck. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So thank you for the headache, I guess, on Friday afternoon to all this baloney that was being reported. Where, oh, there's maybe cold feet, and you knew inevitably Oregon, Washington to the Big Ten, and then Arizona State, Utah was going to follow Colorado to the Big 12. So that's where we currently sit. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we got to chat some NFL, and we'll do so. Training camps opened up around the league, got preseason, Hall of Fame game last week, more preseason games this week. The second-year general manager for the New York Football Giants, Joe Shane, will join us coming up on the Zach Gelb Show in about 5 minutes. The Zach Gelb Show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Sometimes in life, we're faced with tough choices, and the path forward isn't always clear. Whether you're dealing with decisions around career, relationships, or anything else, therapy helps you stay connected to what you really want while you navigate life, so you can move forward with confidence and excitement. Trusting yourself to make decisions that align with your values is like anything. The more you practice it, the easier it gets. Therapy can give you the tools to find more balance in your life so you can keep supporting others without leaving yourself behind. You know, we've all been through some unpredictable times over the past few years, and it's not a sign of weakness to ask for help. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Gelb today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Gelb. Joe Shane of the Giants joins us next. Zach Gelb Show right here, CBS Sports Radio.
The second half of the baseball season is here, and each game means a little bit more. We're talking pennant races and wild card chases, with each pitch bringing us closer to the playoffs. The free Odyssey app lets you listen to live play-by-play of your local team, so no matter what you're up to, you'll never have to miss another game. Download the free Odyssey app today and keep baseball close by all summer long. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. Odyssey.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, we continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We're getting closer and closer to week one of the NFL season, and we're very excited. So let's head out to the hotline right now and welcome in the second-year general manager for the New York Football Giants, and that, of course, is Joe Shane. Joe, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
I've been great. Thanks for having me. Look forward to it.
Yeah, I always appreciate when you come on. So let me start you off. I know you guys are getting ready for the first preseason game later on in the week, and then before you know it, week one will be here up against the Cowboys. But you guys made a nice first impression last season. When you look back at last year, what are really the memories that come back to mind and how you reflect on what the Giants accomplished?
Yeah, it was a great season. You know, obviously starting off with the first win in Tennessee, that is a great memory for ours. You know, Dave's went for it down there, went for two to take the lead, and so that was a great start to the season. And then, you know, we obviously got off to a fast start. So just the job that, you know, we did as an organization, from the coaching staff, the personnel staff, from bringing players in that were brought in as depth players, and they had to eventually graduate up to starters, and the job that the coaches did from a scheme standpoint with the players that we had, and game management, execution, and scheme, and just organizationally, you know, it was an outstanding year, and it was because there were a lot of good people in the right seats, and you know, that did a really good job at executing their job responsibilities at a high level.
No one ever knows how year one will go. For you, it surprised a lot of people, but did it surprise you that you guys ended up making that run to a divisional round weekend in the NFL?
Yeah, I would say the fast start probably surprised me more than anything. And, you know, that really helped build confidence. But, you know, I've been in this, you know, unfortunately, I've had a little bit of experience with startups from, you know, my second year in the league. We hired John Fox. And, you know, his second year, we went to the Super Bowl. I went down to Miami, and Tony Sperano, you know, his first year, went to the playoffs. And Adam Gase went to the playoffs his first year. Sean McDermott went to the playoffs his first year. So I've seen it done quite a few times, and then Dave's did it here his first time. So I've been part of those year one builds with new coaching staffs, and was able to reflect on, you know, how those builds took place and what it looked like. And so, yeah, I was a little bit, you know, early on, you're not really sure how things are going to turn out, but I've seen it done several times before and kind of stuck with the blueprint that, you know, I'd seen before with some of the different organizations.
And you know how this works. Once you make a big impression, people expect you to improve the following season. A bare minimum improvement would then be going from the divisional round to conference championship weekend. When you look around this team in training camp, Joe, do you think you have a shot to be playing the NFC title game this year?
Yeah, I'm not gonna go that far. We're just right now, every team's different, and you know what we did in 2022 was great, but that's in the past. And you know, the 2023 New York Giants are gonna have to build their own identity, our own chemistry, and you know, we're working on that right now at training camp, coming together with some of the new pieces we have. What do they do best? And you know, the coaching staff does a great job of putting players in position to accentuate their strengths and how that fits in our scheme. So you know, not going to make any, you know, how many games we're going to win or where we're going to go. We're just right now, we're focused on, you know, trying to get the best 53 on the roster, understand the guys that we have on our team and what they're going to do best. And once we come up with the right 53 and, you know, we start to build that chemistry and bond, you know, we'll see how far we can take it.
Fair enough. Joe Shane here with us. I know you paid Daniel Jones this offseason, but what did he show you? What did you learn about your quarterback last year?
Yeah, ultimately that guy, his job is to win games, and he did that for us last year. And he had, you know, some fourth quarter comebacks early on in the year. He's got the size, he's got the arm strength, he's athletic. You know, he can gain yards with his feet. He can, you know, make all the throws, and he carried the team when it mattered most in the fourth quarter. And you know, like I said, he had those comebacks. He had a playoff win on the road and played really well. And again, he's got all the physical talent. He's wired the right way. He's one of the hardest workers on the team. And, you know, when you take the the traits that he has along with his habits. You know, I think there's a high ceiling there, and the continuity of the staff, and, you know, having Kafka back again year two as his offensive coordinator, and, you know, the addition of guys like Darren Waller and Jalen Hyatt and, you know, Campbell and some of the other guys that we brought in, you know, just going to really get to see what he can do this year. Again, it was a little bit of a revolving door last year, and he was still able to, you know, perform at a high level despite the constant change at receiver or tight end or whatever it may have been due to injuries. And he was a very steady presence out there for us.
Yeah, and I like the structure of the contract. I know some people look at it and go, $40 million a year, does he actually deserve it? But I like the way that you guys structured the deal. What do you say to people? I know you just praise Jones a lot, but that go, you know what, I'm still skeptical on Daniel Jones, and I doubt what the Giants did this offseason with him.
Yeah, I think we'll see. I think you'll see this season. Again, I've got a lot of confidence in Daniel and our coaching staff and the weapons that we've added. And again, we still got to come together as a group, and we're working on it now because there are new pieces. But the good thing is I think the biggest thing for Daniel is just the continuity of the staff, the understanding of the offense, the ability to execute at a high level. And then you upgrade some of the talent around him, you know, I think you're going to see the best version of Daniel Jones this year.
And I love the move that you made to get Darren Waller, just a phenomenal tight end. The only concern is, can he stay healthy? What have been your early impressions getting to see Darren Waller up close and personal?
Yeah, it's been great to be around Darren. I mean, he's a tremendous worker since the day he got here. He's in here all the time. He's working hard. He's picked up the offense. Very smart, very talented, versatile the way we can use him. So, he's been a great addition this far. We're excited to see what he can do when we get to the regular season. But he's been great since he's been here. And, you know, again, we're just excited to assimilate into the offense. And, you know, him and Daniel have had a good rapport this far, and look forward to that continue to grow.
Joe Shane, we all know the presence a tight end can play. We've seen it with Gronk and Travis Kelce be number one weapons for the Patriots and Chiefs, leading to multiple championships. I remember when you guys were in Buffalo, you ended up getting Josh Allen a number one weapon in the great receiver in Stephon Diggs. Is this move trading for Waller comparable to what you guys did in Buffalo, even though Darren clearly isn't a wide receiver?
Yeah, no, I think so. And when we looked at the market, like who was available for a trade, what was the draft going to look like? You know, I know a lot of the people have been harping on us about a number one receiver. Yeah, like I think if you have a weapon like Waller, whether it's a number one receiver or number one tight end, that can just change the way you do things. And yeah, I think he's got a chance to be a dominant player in this league. And again, we've got to come together and mesh as an offensive unit. We'll see what that looks like, but the talent's absolutely there.
How do you evaluate the rest of the receiving room when you get to just solely the receivers?
Yeah, I think we have some good players there with versatile skill sets, whether it's Darius Slayton and his ability to stretch the field, you know, adding Jalen Hyatt, who can also stretch the field, and both those guys can also run routes. Isaiah Hodgins came in for us late last year and, you know, performed at a high level for us. You know, the addition of Paris Campbell from Indianapolis, you know, had a good year, you know, for them last year, and we got to see him firsthand late in the year, and, you know, he was a good player from there. We have Wandell Robinson coming back off the ACL. He'll be probably returning to practice here in a week or so. So we're excited about him. Daniel Bellinger in year two. Then the running back room, Saquon Barkley and those guys. So there's going to be some weapons. You just got to figure out how we're going to, you know, again, how it's going to all come together, you know, week one versus Dallas. And we're working towards that. But I'm excited about the group we have.
Well, when you got Hodgins, and I know that you were familiar with him during your time with the Bills, did you guys know that you had like this hidden secret, or did his play kind of surprise you guys as well?
Yeah, Hodgins was a guy that always, you know, again, he made plays for us in practice in Buffalo. And then, you know, again, where they were with their group and, you know, it comes to special teams when you're taking, you know, so many receivers to the game. And, you know, Isaiah wasn't doing a lot on special teams for him. So I think that's probably why he came free. And, you know, again, he had familiarity with our offense, and, you know, we knew he was our type of guy, and, you know, Dave's familiarity with him. So, when he became available, you know, we put the claim in for him. It was a no-brainer for us.
Joe Shane here with us, the second-year general manager of the New York Football Giants. You guys are starting to have foundational pieces on this team, and you're taking care of them. One of those players, Andrew Thomas, you guys gave a big contract to and was well-deserved, was a second-team All-Pro last year. Joe, I don't know how much you pay attention to these lists. Did you see that he wasn't on the NFL Top 100 list? Because I couldn't believe that one.
I did, yeah. I was surprised to see that. Yeah, again, a young player, you know, he's a great kid. You know, he's a pro. I mean, he's still 24 and a half, you know, athletic. It's hard to find these left tackles. And, you know, he played at a high level for us last year. So, yeah, I was definitely surprised to see that he wasn't on that top 100 list.
And I remember the first time we talked, you expressed how you really got to build through the trenches. And we've seen now Thomas, right, what Evan Neal has been able to do. But on the other side of the ball, I know Dexter Lawrence got paid, and I know that he is considered to be a great player, but I still feel like Dexter, Joe, is underrated around the NFL.
Yeah, boy, not for us. After seeing him out here for the first 8-9 days of training camp, holy cow, I feel bad for some of our interior guys having to go against him on a daily basis. But another great kid that works hard. He's a load in there. So, yeah, I mean, he was a good player last year, played at a high level. I was glad we were able to get something done with him. And, you know, again, it's, you know, known commodities like Andrew Thomas, Dexter, you know, Daniel, whoever it may be. You know, you eliminate the margin for error when you're around the kids every day. You know how they work. You know their injury history. You know what they're about. And, you know, that just makes those decisions easier.
And he's an absolute mauler on the football field. There's been some comparisons to Aaron Donald. I'll say this, though. He seems like Dexter Lawrence, and you know him better than I do, clearly, like the nicest person off the field.
Oh, yeah. Don't let him fool you, though. He's got a switch. He can flip the switch.
All right, I got to ask you about Saquon Barkley. So the deadline comes and goes of July 17th. You didn't get the long-term deal done, and then you found a way shortly after that to make something work to get him back in the building. I was shocked that you guys were able to get something done so quickly and didn't have to miss any of training camp. How'd that come together?
Yeah, I think it's just a reflection of the kid. Like, Saquon wanted to be here. He's been a big part of this organization. He's an unbelievable teammate, an unbelievable leader. And at the end of the day, you know, he made the decision that he wanted to be here, and we were ecstatic that, you know, that he could be here at the start of camp. So I'm glad the way it worked out. You know, our relationship's good, relationship with all of his teammates, coaches, everything. Didn't miss a beat, and, you know, he's had a really good camp thus far.
With how much work that was put into it on both sides, was it frustrating to not get a long-term deal done?
Yeah, I think any time, whether it's a minimum salary guy or a guy of Saquon's stature, you know, it's a competitive. We're all competitive, and you want to get something done, and you're trying to do what's best for the organization, and he's trying to do what's best for his family. And there's, I know this is highly publicized, but there's a lot of deals that don't get done, whether it's, it could be with our coaching staff. It can be with players. I mean, this happens all the time. It's life. I'm sure you've been through negotiations
that,
maybe didn't get done, or you didn't get what you think you should get. And everybody goes through it on a daily basis. And sometimes they don't get done. And, like I said, my press conference, that's okay. You know, we're still in a good spot. The relationship's good, and we're looking forward to Saquon having a really good season.
The shelf life of a running back, this has been well publicized, and the state of the league and paying running back is always tricky. When you look at Saquon, even though you didn't get a long-term deal done this time, do you still kind of look at him and say this is a guy that is going to be here for a while with the Giants?
Yeah, we'll see what the season holds. Like, we haven't had those conversations. Obviously, we're just coming off of getting into camp, but, you know, we'll let it play out. We'll have those conversations down the road. But we think the world of Saquon, on the field, off the field, in the locker room, all that stuff is important to us. And, you know, we'll let it play out and, you know, see where we are at the end of the season.
Last thing I'll ask you, Joe Shane, you know the Buffalo Bills organization very well, your time there with Brandon Bean. You also got a chance to know DeMar Hamlin. That was one of the scariest things I've ever seen on a football field that Monday night late in the year. Now, to see him back on the field and making plays in training camp, just what are your feelings being able to see something that many of us thought would never happen?
Yeah, I mean, you just saying that gives me chills. I mean, he's such a great kid. You know, I was there when we drafted him. And to see his ascension, you know, he's a backup year one and then, you know, starting some games year two. And I was super proud of the kid. And then, I mean, to see what happened on the field there, nobody ever wants to see that. And obviously a lot of prayers were answered. And for him to be where he is to now, where he is right now from that day on the field is just, it's unbelievable. It's a true blessing. And, you know, I'm ecstatic for him and in the organization. And the training staff did a phenomenal job there. I know all those guys personally. And they're one of the best in the league, and, you know, showed that evening.
Joe, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. Appreciate it. Take care.
There he is, the second-year general manager of the Giants, and Joe Shane joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. You could think of Riley Auto Parts For all your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we have three very interesting baseball stories for you, and you don't want to miss those.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I have three baseball stories from over the weekend. One is regarding just stupidity by the Orioles with one of their broadcasters and suspending him over nothing. We'll get into that in just a bit. The other is that great fight between Jose Ramirez and Tim Anderson, and now Tim Anderson is getting suspended for 6 games, and Jose Ramirez is appealing his suspension, but he got suspended for 3 games. And we'll get to those in just a bit, but I want to start you off with Trey Turner, because I think whether you root for the Phillies or not, everyone has an opinion on this. So Trey Turner this offseason signs a monster contract with the Philadelphia Phillies. And remember, not that I'm a big World Baseball Classic guy, but he had a great World Baseball Classic. And we all know Trey Turner has been a really good player for a bunch of years with the Nationals and the Dodgers. And a lot of people are saying, now, this could be an MVP candidate. And this could be a guy that go win the MVP in the NL. Now, he has had a disastrous year one with the Phillies. And it's not the first time we've seen a player get a big contract. You go to a passionate fan base in a major city, and with how much money you're paying that guy, the player just doesn't live up to the hype. Now, ultimately, do I think Trey Turner will turn it around? Yes. But sometimes when you get hit with just so much poor play and then you feel that pressure like you do in Philadelphia, you just can't find a way to dig yourself out of the hole that you jump into. And I've seen it before. Guys come to the Mets. Guys come to the Yankees, being on the East Coast. Big, passionate cities. And they're just not built for it. So Trey Turner, on Friday night, when he returns to Citizens Bank Ballpark, gets a standing ovation by the fans. And I actually think my buddy at Sports Radio 94 WIP, Jack Fritz, said, hey, we should give this guy a standing ovation. I don't know if that's where the origins were, but that's when I first saw it on my timeline. Jack is a producer and co-host on 94 WIP in Philadelphia for their afternoon show with the great Johnny Marks that you hear on CBS Sports Radio, and also former Eagles linebacker and special teams demon in Ike Reese. So Friday comes, they give a big standing ovation, all of that. And then Saturday, he hits a big home run. So I've seen two different reactions here. Nice job by the Philly fans, or, oh, the Philadelphia fans have become soft. Now, I don't love the idea of giving a player a standing ovation when he's not playing well, but it's kind of a sign that we're here to support you. We know it hasn't been a good start. We got your back. And for Trey Turner, who is passionate about what he does, I'm sure it allows him to exhale when he probably just goes to the ballpark each and every day saying, I've never struggled this much in my career. Now I'm hearing about it each and every day. But the second part of what I said, which I find funny here, is that how many times throughout the years do people in the national media, do they say, oh, Philadelphia, those awful fans, and they bring up like the snowball incident with Santa Claus, like all this stupidity. So think about this. Philadelphia fans usually get crushed because they're passionate, they boo, and a lot of times the booing is done to hold the player accountable. So now, when they've booed, since they have no more booing left in them, they give a player a round of applause, and people are like, did the Philly fan get soft? It's like, you can't win if you're a Philadelphia sports fan. When you're usually really passionate, critical, and you're booing the team, people go, oh, you're putrid, terrible fans. And then you say, I'm going to lend this player a helping hand. Oh, you guys are getting soft. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I just wonder what people's reactions were on this. And I'll give you my take. When I first saw it, did I love it? No. But if it allows Trey Turner to exhale and finally feel some positivity, and then also he starts to play better, then it worked. But if we're sitting here in 2 weeks from now and Trey Turner just hit a home run on Saturday and then goes back to stinking up the joint, I bet your ass those Philadelphia fans, as they should, that gave him the nice standing ovation, whether you agree with it or not, back in 2 weeks, they're going to be booing the crap out of him. So I think there's a lot of overreaction to it, but it's let's wait and see what transpires from that. But I don't think it was a bad look for Philadelphia sports fans, and I think people that are criticizing the Philadelphia sports fans also probably the same people that go, oh, they're terrible, awful human beings and fans, and it's like, oh, well, they actually did a nice gesture, and now you have a problem with it. So that's baseball story number one. Baseball story number two. I have to get to this Baltimore Orioles broadcaster, which I don't understand here. When I saw the headline from Awful Announcing that Baltimore Orioles broadcaster has been suspended, I'm expecting that Kevin Brown said something offensive, right? Whether it was something racial, homophobic, whatever it may be, where how many times throughout the last few years have we seen broadcasters get in hot water and, you know, lose their job or get suspended and deservedly so because they say really offensive things. So when I see that Orioles broadcaster gets suspended, and then before you read the rest of the comment, I'm thinking to myself, he must have said something overly offensive. You be the judge here. This is Baltimore Orioles play-by-play man Kevin Brown talking about some of the team's misfortunes of the past and how they have turned it around, and all he did was give stats.
For the Orioles, Brandon Hyde has felt like this has been maybe the toughest ballpark to play in, but the Orioles have a chance to do something special today. They've already clinched at least a split in the series, winning two of the first three, and they could pick up a series win behind Tyler Wells today. It's been a minute. The Orioles split a two-gamer with the Rays in June. They had lost their last 15 series here at Tropicana Field. You have to go back to when our now colleague Brett Brock picked up the win in the series finale June 25th, 2017, the last time the Orioles won a series here at St. Pete. Already got 3-2 at the Trop this year after winning 3 of 18 the previous 3 years combined. It is a stark difference, Ben, and it is not a bad Rays team. It's not like all of a sudden the Rays became slouches in the American League East. They've led this division every day, but now two, and the Orioles once again are back alone in first place.
So that's all that was said by Kevin Brown, the play-by-play man for the Baltimore Orioles. What did he say wrong? He said what everyone else in America knows, that the Baltimore Orioles have been atrocious for a long time, and now they're having this great season. And because the broadcaster brings up their bad play before up against Tampa, you have this thin-skinned owner in John Angelos that is now throwing a temper tantrum. Oh, the play-by-play man said this. Oh, he said that. Wah! Like, John, put the pacifier in your mouth and shut up. You're having a great positive season. And I know all your PR lackeys come out today and say, oh, Kevin Brown will be back soon. But because your owner is a petulant baby and he was annoyed that Kevin Brown was just giving factual information that everyone else knows, oh, we need him to be away from the team. And if there's more to this story, please alert me. But so far, I haven't seen it. What a big fat joke and what a disgrace. Like, John, just shut up for the rest of the year and let people finally enjoy your baseball team because they've been horrible for a while. And now they're great. And because people point out the turnaround and what has transpired, oh, big time problem here. And now I got to suspend people. This is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I will get to later on in the show the great call by the longtime play-by-play man for the Guardians in Tom Hamilton with this epic brawl over the weekend. Down goes Anderson between Tim Anderson and Jose Ramirez. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. First coach's poll out. We'll talk about it next.
The official Winning Time podcast from HBO is back. I'm Rodney Barnes, executive producer on the show.
Magic and the Lakers are back to defend their title.
Join me as I break down each new episode with sports writer Jeff Perlman and the actors, directors, and key collaborators who brought the 1980s Showtime Lakers to life.
It's not about basketball. It's about winning.
Listen to HBO's official Winning Time podcast on Sundays after the show airs on Max.
This is it. It's what you've been waiting for.
Billions returns to bring us the most epic showdown yet to a brand new streaming home on Paramount Plus.
We're back, baby!
We've got a fantastic story this season.
Buckle up. Bobby's back.
We're bringing the fight to Axe.
Everyone gets caught in the crossfire.
There's exciting stuff coming.
And now that Axe is coming back, the final showdown can begin.
This is the Good News Express Flammable.
Return to the all-access world of the rich and powerful. Don't miss new episodes of Billions, streaming August 4th on the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.